20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Happy Wednesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks, as always, for being here today. Quick shout out to our brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members, Carl, C-A-W-R-L, Carl, and Tomahawk2626. Thanks so much for signing up. Appreciate you guys a ton. I have a couple things that I want to demonstrate to you really quick. One is that I'm an idiot. Number two is that when I've talked to you in the past about sometimes I get an inclination of wanting to do something and I just have to do it. And if I don't do it, I'll never do it. So I just have to do it in that moment. Well, at the end of the day, and I'm talking like 11 p.m. on Tuesday, I decided before I had my podcast done, before I uploaded Dusty, Steve, and Sarah's podcast to the audio channel, I decided I was going to put together an article. I haven't written an article since the Grading the Pack article to end the season, Packers, Eagles. And I don't know the last time I wrote an article that wasn't a Grading the Pack article in general. I decided that I was going to put together an article basically cataloging this entire Jaire Alexander situation from beginning to end, because this entire situation is, we'll get into it eventually in another episode for another day. But I really wanted to take it from beginning to end and where we are today. Of course, Matt Schneidman reports on Tuesday that the latest update is that the Packers have offered Jaire a restructure. He has not accepted it as of yet. Jaire wants to be a Packer, which is a big update. And then that he plans on attending mandatory minicamp. Those are some pretty big updates. But I decided I want to put together this entire, and I'm like, how long can this take? There's been like multiple updates that have taken, but I really wanted it to be comprehensive. Yada, yada, yada. It is 3:35 in the morning. The article is done. It'll be posted at 7 a.m. over on PackerReport.com, so you can check that out as well. It is extremely comprehensive with all the reports that we've gotten throughout the course of this entire thing, the injuries, the contract situation, all of it. It's all in there, and there'll be a follow-up to that article as well at some point, either via article or podcast, and we can kind of break it all down. But definitely check that out. The number one thing again is that I'm an idiot. For some reason, I felt the inclination at 11 p.m. to dig into that in its entirety and then actually put together the full article on it as well and post it and edit it and all of that stuff. So I'm stupid. The second thing is that it is posted out there. And like I said, if I get the inclination that I want to do something, usually I just do it. And that's exactly what happened. And now I've, of course, I'm recording a podcast at 3:36 in the morning, but I digress. We've got a lot to get into. Of course, that Jaire Alexander situation is a piece of it. That is, it's a big update from Matt and extremely well done on his end to get that information. The big piece here is that Jaire wants to be a Packer. We have not heard anything from his side this entire time, at least that I've seen from Domofsky or Schneidman or Silverstein or any of these guys, right? I've not seen anything out there of what Jaire wants in this situation. And there have been reports of like, or at least thoughts of, hey, if they're not going to give him the contract that he wants, he would rather be released so he can be a free agent and sign where he wants to, which is understandable. But this is our first real report that he wants to, in fact, be a Green Bay Packer. The last thing that we had really heard was at the locker room cleanout where he's like, I don't have anything positive to say, and I don't know if I'm going to be a Packer. And that was sort of the end of that. At that point, we haven't really heard from his side of things since. Now we know he wants to be a Packer. That is a huge step in this. Also, the Packers made an actual offer to renegotiate this contract. And at this point, again, Jaire has not accepted, but that's another big step where it didn't seem like maybe that was ever going to be the case where the Packers were actually going to offer him something. They now have. And if you're going to offer, you have to be ready for the opposing, or not the opposing, but the opposite party to accept it. And that would mean he'd be a Packer, right? So they're open to that happening. So we now know that both sides are at least amicable to a resolution and to something working out in 2025. That's a big step that we did not know prior to, you know, Tuesday. And again, a huge update from Matt Schneidman. Meanwhile, it was reported as well that he plans on showing up to mandatory minicamp, if not before that. That would be an interesting scenario. Green Bay cannot have Jaire practice without this resolved, because if he were to get injured, tear an ACL or an Achilles, Green Bay is going to be on the hook for that entire contract this year. Any idea of potentially trading him or of being able to use him this year are completely out the window. And that it just is a nightmare situation. So they can't have him practice. This could be a little bit of a play from Jair saying, hey, I'm showing up. Like, if you want this done before I show up, you need to get this done. And either let's keep this contract as is, figure out a negotiation that's going to make sense for both of us, or release me or trade me so I can figure out where I'm going to play in 2025. It does, again, seem to be trending in a positive direction, but nothing is solidified as of yet. And this, I'm sure, still could take a million different turns as it has already, but we will continue to monitor that. I understand, by the way, that this is a situation that a lot of people are just sick of. It was in the comments yesterday. Listen, it is a dominating topic for a reason. This is a potential, you know, all-pro corner who has not been able to stay healthy. That, you know, you're not going to find another player like Jair if he's playing and healthy and playing well. You're just not going to find another player like that on the open market at this point, whether it's via trade or whether it's via a signing. It's just not going to happen. This is your best way to really, if I say, quote unquote, improve this roster, is by bringing Jair back and keeping him healthy. And if you trade him, what's that trade compensation in return? If you release him, are you going to use that money some other way? These are all very interesting aspects. And this is a pretty sizable shatter point with the Packers right now as to what happens with Jair. And then what are the repercussions of that move? It is a major story, and it continues to be until we have a resolution. And then that, once we get that resolution, that'll even be a bigger story. And then we can kind of break down the pieces of whatever remains from there. But this is definitely something that we are going to continue to talk about and monitor, because it is a huge situation for Green Bay and hopefully for all parties, the Packers, the fans, Jair, that this can get resolved sooner rather than later. But Goody has shown a great deal of patience in the past, and this is certainly one where he is biding his time and trying to find the move that is most advantageous for the Green Bay Packers, which I cannot fault him for. That is technically his 1A job description, is doing what's best for the Green Bay Packers. We'll see if he can find a resolution that is best for business for the Packers and Brian Gutekunst. Meanwhile, Ben Solak posted an article over on ESPN. It was like 100 things of 2025, of just kind of things he's thinking, going through his head, rankings, etc. It's a really good article. Highly recommend checking it out. The first two people on the list, maybe it was biased because I'm in Green Bay and I do know that ESPN will sort of change their algorithm a bit for location-based, but the first two people on that list were Elgton Jenkins, and after that, it was Adrian Cooper. And these were just two players of, you know, extreme interest to him. He's, you know, super complimentary of both players. Adrian Cooper saying that, you know, maybe there were only a handful of linebackers that were playing linebacker better than Adrian Cooper by the end of last year. Said he could have a massive breakout season this year. Elgton Jenkins also had incredible positive things to say, mostly based upon his versatility along the offensive line. So great way to start the article. Then talks about Packers-Eagles being one of the key matchups this upcoming season. And that, of course, the tush push and the Packers trying to ban it is a huge part of this, and maybe never looking forward to a 4th-and-1 as much as this game, which, again, is well said. And then he had to go and ruin it. No, I'm just kidding. I love Ben. But he would go on to say that one of his bold predictions for this year is that the Packers will not make the playoffs. And he's cited two specific reasons for that, basically saying that if you want to be a playoff team, you have two non-negotiables. You have to have a top-end wide receiver, and you have to have a really good pass rush. Now, I like where Ben's mind is at on this overall, not on the Packers missing the playoffs. Let me clearly state that. But I do like where his mind is at when it comes to the Packers ceiling. The wide receiver thing, I think you can maneuver because Green Bay has a variety of wide receivers, plus tight ends, plus running backs. I am very much in the mindset still that Green Bay has plenty of weapons on offense with Jordan Love, with Matt LaFleur. I do not believe they're going to be lacking for weapons, but I understand his overall sentiment. I get it, but I think Green Bay is going to be fine in that regard because of the plethora of weapons and options that they have on offense. It's number one. The second thing, though, from a pass rush standpoint, I tend to agree with him, save for the point, I don't think it's a limiting factor in getting to the playoffs. There are 7 teams that make this thing now, 14 on each side, 14 teams overall. And you're going to have a couple teams that maybe aren't an upper echelon pass rush team. Also, the Packers were 8th in sacks a season ago, like not catastrophic, and had a very down year. You bring in a new defensive line coach, you're hoping that Rashawn Gary, LVN, Devontae Wyatt, Kenny Clark, et cetera, can take a step. You get a fourth round pick, a fifth round pick, maybe one of those guys hits a little bit. You have some more options and you're hoping that DeMarcus Covington can kind of unlock those guys. But again, even if it doesn't, even if you get the same productivity that you did a year ago, which was not great, the Packers were a playoff team last year and the year before that with basically the same group of defensive linemen that they had previously. Meanwhile, Jeff Hafley showed that he's a very creative blitzer, and the Packers do have multiple options from the secondary, whether it's a Xavier McKinney or a Keyshawn Nixon. Nate Hobbs can do it. There's a variety of different defensive backs that can blitz, but more importantly, Edgerton Cooper, Quay Walker, pretty darn good blitzers from the interior of that linebacker group as well. Jeff Hafley knows how to bring pressure and get there with a variety of different looks. Even if he's still bringing four, if he's kind of mixing and matching where those four are coming with, it is shown to be a problem for opposing offenses. But what I do agree with, again, with Ben on is I do think it's a limiter for how far you can get in the playoffs. And it's something that I've certainly been thinking a lot about as well, as to just how high of a level can this pass rush get to. I think it is a complete prerequisite. Somebody corrected me. I do know it's prerequisite. It just comes out as prerequisite sometimes. The R just sort of slurs around there, but prerequisite to being a Super Bowl team or a high-end team is a pass rush that can get there with four. And I think that is the 1A biggest question for this Packers team this offseason and going into the season is, can they get to that point moving forward? We shall see. It will be determined, and hopefully they can be. They have got four first-round picks on that defensive front. Their linebacker, Quay Walker, is a first. Edgerton Cooper is an early second. Like, they've got the pieces up front theoretically. Now can that theoretical group become a dominant group? That remains to be seen, but I do believe that that is a limiter to what Green Bay's ceiling is, but I disagree with Ben's premise that they can't make it to the playoffs. They just did the past two seasons, and I certainly think they can and will again this upcoming year. Definitely check out that article from Ben Solak, though, a friend of the show, and he does just a phenomenal job. We'll be right back. Let's jump into our main topic, and that is our OTA preview. OTA started yesterday on Tuesday. I don't even know if we got anything from Packers.com. I haven't checked it out, but no media availability on Tuesday. Wednesday is the first full practice that is open to the media all season. Really, the rookie minicamp was nothing. It was basically an orientation. And so this is our first practice of the year that we get to attend. No pads, not open to the fans, unfortunately. Same thing for OTAs next week and minicamp the week after that, at least as far as we know as of right now. But this is really our first foray into Packers football this year. And as you can imagine, I could not be more excited. I will be at a practice today if I don't sleep through everything based on it being super late right now. But I'm so pumped. The adrenaline in and of itself will get me through the day, I am sure. But we're actually going to get some Packers practice. Non-padded that it may be, I'm still remarkably excited for it. And of course, we'll break it all down for you. I am going to be live on Bleacher Report immediately following practice. And then I'm going to do a live Q&A and just sort of recap 5:30 p.m. Central Time right on the YouTube channel for Packaday. And then, of course, I'll break it all down for you here tomorrow on the podcast on the YouTube channel as well for the full episode tomorrow. But what I wanted to do for you now is kind of go over a preview of OTAs, but more importantly, kind of what I'm going to be watching for, what I'm going to be looking for as I head to OTA practice on Wednesday. And there's 14 different things that we're going to kind of go over and that I'm going to kind of be scanning the field for, trying to, you know, check as much as I can through the course of practice. And hopefully my Twitter fingers are still working from, you know, a little bit of an off season here. But the number one thing, and I talked about it with Justice Mosqueda, who is on our members only Q&A. You can check it out. It's now open to everyone if you didn't get a chance to see that, but is attendance. Who's there? Who's not? There's always going to be maybe a couple of veterans that do not show up. These are non-mandatory. They're voluntary OTAs at this point. Of course, they're highly recommended. It's always a good thing to go. There's always like a random, like Jonathan Garvin never went to these. I never could understand why. Like, you're Jonathan Garvin. You were a seventh round pick. You're a fringe roster guy. Get to OTAs. Maybe he had something serious going on. I don't mean to throw him under the bus. I don't know his reasoning for it, but it did happen in multiple seasons. But either way, you know, who is there, who is not. And some main players that I'm going to be keeping an eye on: Elgton Jenkins, of course, that ongoing potential contract dispute there. Is he at OTAs? Is he not? That will be a big one. I don't think there's any way where Jair is going to be there. If he is, and certainly if he's practicing, that would be pretty noteworthy. But of course, the expectation is that he will not be there. Romeo Doubs? Is there any sort of lingering issue there, whether it for whatever reason, or that's kind of another one that I think is interesting. And then is anyone else just noteworthy that's going to be missing from practice? So attendance is going to be the first thing that I know myself and everyone else is looking at. I'm going to kind of be scanning the field for some of those big ones. And then one of the things that just about everyone on the beat does is take attendance and tweet it out so we can pretty much see it right away. So having all of us do it at the same time doesn't really serve any purpose. So I'll start looking at other things, but I'll definitely be keeping an eye when the rest of the group kind of puts out their attendance tweets and information throughout the course of the day, which is super helpful. Those guys all do a tremendous job. Number two is injuries. It kind of goes along with attendance, but more importantly, it's one thing to be absent. It's one thing to not be practicing due to an injury. We know Christian Watson will not be practicing due to injury, but is there anyone else? I'm sure there probably is. I do not imagine that they've got a, 89-man roster that's entirely healthy at the moment, but hopefully very minimal, hopefully very few, but any injuries will be noteworthy. We'll try to get an update from Matt after practice of what any of those injuries are or from PR during the course of the day, but who's out and what is the ailment that they have. Fingers crossed there are minimal, or maybe even in a best case scenario, only Christian Watson. Of course, the next thing I'm going to be looking for is our first glance at these rookies and free agents. The rookies we got to see the tiniest snippet of at rookie minicamp, basically just seeing what they look like in a jersey. That is basically it. We got to see them go through warmups. We got to see them work on some footwork stuff, and that was basically it. So we did not really get a glimpse of these wide receivers or any of these rookies, I should say, practicing, or like a wide receiver like Matthew Golden, as I was going to say, look, what does he look like in comparison to running the same drill as a Romeo Doubs, a Jaden Reed, a Dontavian Wicks, etc. So the rookies, Matthew Golden, I think being the main one, what does he look like? Do any of the other rookies stand out? And then of course the free agents as well. This is our first look at Aaron Banks, assuming that he's there. Same thing with Nate Hobbs, to a lesser extent, Mecole Hardman, Isaiah Simmons. What do these players look like? It's just our first, opportunity to get to see any of these guys really in green and gold. And that will be definitely a big thing that I'll be keeping an eye on all throughout Wednesday's practice. Next one is depth chart notes. Who's the starter at left tackle? Is there anybody that's rotating in? Is it Rashid Walker? Is it Jordan Morgan? Is it Anthony Belton? What about at right guard? Is it Sean Ryan? Is it Jordan Morgan? Is it Anthony Belton? Who's the starter at 4-3 linebacker? I'm assuming it's going to be Isaiah McDuffie alongside Quay Walker and Edgerrin Cooper, but is it Tyron Hopper? Is it another linebacker? Again, I expect McDuffie, but who's starting there? Who's the starting defensive end opposite Rashawn Gary? Are there any other noteworthy players at spots that we would not expect, or a player that worked their way up the depth chart that we simply would not expect? There's always somebody, all right? There's always somebody at a spot that you did not see coming. I remember the year where Ben Braden was all of a sudden an OTA or minicamp starting with the ones. You're like, what's going on right now? Ben Braden is starting? He ended up not even making it out of training camp, or like out of the, cut downs into the active roster. I don't even remember if he made it on the practice squad. I think he did for a little bit, but he went from starter at OTAs and minicamps to not even making the team. So don't put too much stock into any of this. They're not making any starting decisions, nor do even starters necessarily exactly matter because of all the personnel groupings and packages and everything else. But we'll keep an eye on it nonetheless and see if there are any players that are in positions that you wouldn't expect. But it definitely happens from time to time, and we'll see if that happens on Wednesday. All right, next up is any unique personnel groupings or formations. For example, who's your nickel? Again, we're expecting Jair's not going to be there. Is it Hobbs and Nixon on the outside with Bullard in the slot? Is it Valentine and Nixon on the outside with Hobbs in the slot? What does that look like? What does Dime look like if we get a Dime personnel package? Are there different rush groups that we see? Yeah, all of those sort of things. And then on offense, of course, the three wide receivers, the four wide receivers. I think we can expect that the two tight end set's going to be Musgrave and Kraft, but is there anything unique, surprising? All those different groupings, personnel packages, be keeping an extra eye on and seeing if there's anything noteworthy or unique about those groupings. Number six, where do certain players line up? Nate Hobbs, we kind of talked about that. Is he outside or is he in the slot? Is he doing both? Where does he primarily line up? Javon Bullard, is he safety? Is he slot? Where does he primarily line up? Colin Oliver, pass rusher, off-ball linebacker. Anthony Belton, tackle or guard. Jordan Morgan, tackle or guard, multiple positions. There's a couple others on that list as well. John Williams, but those are, I think, the big ones. And I am going to be interested to see just where some of these players actually line up and if they get multiple different spots, especially for some of the rookies, right? Sometimes you can overload rookies with too much. Now, usually in OTA and minicamp, they're willing to throw more stuff at them just to see what kind of looks best. And then they kind of make a decision going into camp of like, all right, we're going to start him in one spot in camp. But OTAs and minicamp, sometimes you see a little bit more movement just to get a kind of feel where that primary position is and where they might be best playing in that spot. Next up is number 7. If Elton is gone, who's at center? Does Sean Ryan move over? And if so, who's at right guard? Do we see Rashid Walker at left tackle? Banks at left guard, Sean Ryan at center, and then Jordan Morgan at right guard? Or does Morgan continue to rotate at left tackle because that's where they want to play him? And does Belton get snaps right away at right guard with Ryan at center? Or do they just keep things as is, keep Sean Ryan at right guard, and does Jacob Monk get some time with the ones? I'm going to be very interested to see who's that starting center if, in fact, Elton is not at practice. Number 8 is probably one we could have put much higher on this list, but just Jordan Love. I don't even need to go into any more detail on it. What does he look like? How does he... how is he throwing? What does his mechanics look like? What does his footwork look like? I don't care if he throws picks. I don't care if all that sort of stuff. But, this is a big season for Jordan upcoming. And again, I think it's a real sort of ceiling and floor setter for him and what his, kind of future is going to be as the franchise quarterback in Green Bay. Obviously, he wanted to get off to a strong start. Nothing's going to be determined in a random OTA practice. But just in general, how does Jordan look? And, hopefully we get some real awesome positive signs, but just in general, kind of what does he look like under center coming back from all the injuries from a season ago? Number 9, it's that time of year. Everyone is in the best shape of their career. That's probably true to some extent, but every once in a while you get a player. I remember Raven Green one year. Raven Green, went through some sort of Captain America serum, superhero serum. And he just bulked up, completely hulked out in an off season. And every once in a while, you get a couple of these players that you're just like, is that the same guy? We already heard about Edgerrin Cooper, hulking up in a pretty significant way. So I'm looking forward to seeing if there's any of these players that are like, oh, that player does look really different. And I think probably Edgerrin Cooper goes at the top of that list based on what Jeff Hafley said recently. Are there any just bizarro situations that we do not see coming? I mentioned the Ben Braden one earlier. There have been just ones where you get players ahead of other players that you weren't expecting, or maybe a personnel group or a formation, or there's just usually something noteworthy that makes you go, huh, didn't see that coming. And maybe it's much ado about nothing, or maybe it's something important, but is there anything that stands out that's just random and odd or unique that we were not expecting going into the practice? Number 11. Any noteworthy takeaways from Matt LaFleur? He's going to talk after practice. Does he say anything noteworthy? Does he talk about the Jaire Alexander situation? Any injury updates? We'll kind of go over that as well. Next is, this is the type of time of year where we get hype and hope. I'm watching all these OTA practices and just little highlight clips throughout Twitter and throughout the league. And I'm just A, excited for football, but B, this is the time where still hope springs eternal. Everyone's going to turn out the best version of themselves. LVN's going to look like a beast, and Jordan Love's throwing a tight spiral down the field every time in perfect rhythm with his wide receivers. And it's just that time of year, right? We're excited about football. We want to see and hope for the best on all these players. It's never going to really work out that way, but I'm just looking forward to seeing some of these guys out there, see who stands out, and of course, get us all hyped up and jacked up about who's performing at a level that maybe we weren't expecting, or whatever the case may be. It's overhype season to the extreme, and I am all here for it. No questions asked. We'll be right back. Next up, number 13, is that random Andy player. And this, yes, I'm using myself here, not to make myself a main character by any means. But there's always that player that I just randomly come across or notice and, just kind of keep an extra eye on, right? Some people will still ask me from time to time, the Tim Boyle or the Robert Tonyan, because those are players that were, kind of synonymous with me from an early point where I'm keep an eye on these guys. I remember it like it was yesterday. It was the Jimmy Graham and Mercedes Lewis free agent class. And it was, I believe it was OTAs. And it was either that or minicamp. And it was our first opportunity. I can't remember if I was covering the team at that point or if I was just going in the stands and minicamp was open. Either way, it was the fans, at minimum, the fans' first opportunity to see these tight ends, specifically Jimmy Graham, but also Mercedes Lewis and that kind of that free agent class. And I'm out there the first day I can be out there. Again, I can't remember if it was via media or whether it was just as a fan out there. I was still covering the team in some capacity, but going out there and watching Aaron Rodgers, just like a kid in a candy store, being like, I'm going to spam Jimmy Graham up the seam all day, and I'm going to throw a bunch of passes to Mercedes Lewis. And you get these big, two tall tight ends, 6'7", 6'8", and they look awesome. And of course, there's no pads yet or anything. And I'm like, I'm really excited. And I'm like, Jimmy Graham catches a seam pass, and Mercedes catches one, and then Graham's another. And then at the end of practice, there's like, I'm like, man, he had a steam up, he had a pass up the seam again, and it was Rodgers again. I'm like, man, this Jimmy Graham and these tight ends, they just look amazing. And I'm like, wait, who the heck is that? Wasn't number 80, you know, wasn't Mercedes Lewis or Jimmy Graham. It was Robert Tonyan at the time, who we all called Robert Tonyan because we didn't know it was pronounced Tonyan. And I'm like, holy crap. Like, he looked eerily similar to, you know, some of the stuff that Jimmy Graham was doing all throughout the day. And I just earmarked it. I'm like, that was a really impressive play. You know, a great catch up the seam, looked like the size, the speed, everything that you wanted. Like, I think there's something there. Kept an eye on him, became somebody I monitored throughout the course of the offseason, ends up making the team and going on to have not only a nice Packers career up until he really suffered that bad injury, but went on to have a great NFL career. And then the other one was, of course, Tim Boyle. And Tim Boyle, I remember it like yesterday as well, it being at his first practice. And with Boyle, I think it might have been the same one, actually. But with Boyle, the interesting one with him, and I, of course, had watched his undrafted free agent after he had signed with Green Bay. I watched some tape of him and whatnot. If you don't know, Tim Boyle was, like, arguably, statistically, like, the worst college quarterback in the history of college football. Like, it's remarkably bad, the numbers that he put up in college. If you've never looked at it, go look at it. It's like one touchdown to, like, 12 interceptions or something. And it's just, it was really bad. And I look at the stats first when I looked at him as a UDFA, and I'm like, what is Green Bay doing? I threw on the tape and I'm like, I immediately understand this. And he had a great arm. He had good poise in the pocket, like looked the part, layered some footballs that you do not expect to see from a college quarterback, much less one that had the worst stat line that I've ever seen. Like, yeah, I get it. So I get to the practice. And remember, the quarterbacks here are Aaron Rodgers. I'm not, you know, he's pretty good. You know, of course, this is pretty close to, like, maybe not prime Aaron Rodgers, but still right there, right? The other two quarterbacks were Brett Hundley, who had started almost the entirety of the previous season because of that Aaron Rodgers injury at the hands of Anthony Barr and the Minnesota Vikings. And then the other quarterback was DeShone Kizer, who they just traded for, who was a second round pick the year before and started basically the entire year for the Cleveland Browns. Boyle had no chance. He was going up against Rodgers, who's not going anywhere. Not really going up against Rodgers, but you get my point. Rodgers is QB1, and the other two quarterbacks are Brett Hundley and DeShone Kizer, who they just traded for. Kizer's basically a lock to make the team because they just traded Demaryius Randall for him. He was just a second-round pick the year before by Cleveland. And Brett Hundley, again, just started for Green Bay almost the entirety of the season before. And the thing that stood out to me in that very first practice for Tim Boyle was not a throw that he made. It was not any sort of play that he made on the field. I just watched him out there with the rest of those three quarterbacks, with Aaron Rodgers, DeShone Kizer, and Brett Hundley, three very accomplished college quarterbacks, and of course Rodgers in the NFL, and the other two started the entire year before, basically. And I'm watching Tim Boyle, and if you just took everything away, you stripped everything away, you did not know anything about the four quarterbacks. If you were, this is your first time watching, I said, just look out at those four quarterbacks. And I'm not talking talent-wise here. I'm just talking on, like, persona. I'm like, who's the alpha out there? I said, which one of those guys is walking around and acting like they're the starting quarterback? I would have told you Tim Boyle. He has no right. He's coming off an awful college career, basically. And Aaron Rodgers is there. And these two accomplished, you know, young quarterbacks and Brett Hundley and DeShone Kizer are there. And If I just imagine being in that position, you're just with Aaron, just in and of itself, you're going to be shell shocked and not even knowing what to do. You're at your first, basically, you know, practice that's open. Like your head's got to be spinning. Like, what are you thinking? And it looked like Tim Boyle was the starting quarterback and was like on his way to a Hall of Fame career. Just ultimate swagger, just ultimate alpha mentality, just out there like he was owning the place. It immediately stood out to me. And then I did a radio show and like people were, I remember I was on and they're like, well, who stood out to you? And I talked to, basically gave a shorter version of that Tim Boyle story. And like at the end of it, he's like, well, you heard it here first. Tim Boyle, real opportunity to make this team. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. That is not what I said. But I was really impressed nonetheless. And I was impressed by his college tape too, despite the lack of productivity in numbers, the actual arm talent, everything looked good. And Tim Boyle, Tennessee Titan right now in 2025, like he has gone on to make a remarkable NFL career as a backup out of this entire situation. So his career has been one that's been fun to follow because of that. But there's always a random, you know, Packer that, you know, I'm like, hey, keep an eye out for this guy. Raven Green was another one who had a couple years in Green Bay. And again, it may not be somebody who ends up having this, you know, breakout Hall of Fame career, but it's usually going to be somebody that, you know, might actually end up having a real chance to make it, just like Tim Boyle or Robert Tonyan did. So we'll see if there's a random Andy Packer that we're going to keep an extra eye on as well this year. And last but not least, we get some actual football. Man, we have waited, right? Ever since Packers-Eagles, a disappointing loss. You go through the doldrums of like, having to watch the other playoff games and then, you know, just kind of recapping the season. You jump into free agency, then the draft, and then we get to rookie mini camps, but it's nothing really happening. And then finally we get to this and actual practice and some actual football, even if it doesn't mean anything, even if of course we're going to overreact everything, it's still some level of football. I cannot wait for it. I'll cover it all for you right here on the Packaday podcast. Make sure not to miss anything. Subscribe, like, comment, give those 5-star reviews. We appreciate that a ton. Just to recap what I'm going to be watching for: attendance, injuries, rookies and free agents, any depth chart notes, personnel groupings informations, where do players line up, who's the center if Elton's gone, Jordan Love's performance, who's in the best shape of their career, do we get any bizarro players that we didn't see coming, you know, jumping up the depth chart that we weren't expecting, any noteworthy takeaways from Matt LaFleur, some extra hype and hope this time of year, that random Andy player, and just by golly, football. We have some actual football to talk about, and I'm excited about it. That's going to do it for me today. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Dylan Patscott, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Jake Conner, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkle, Sinkle, Jen Wright, The Gable Storm, Matt Geiger, and Pack Attack Kasten. For the love of all things holy, please go check out that Jair Alexander article over on PackerReport.com. So I did not do that for nothing. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but actually I'll see you tonight at the live Q&A following practice today, 5:30 Central Time. So see you guys then, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.